What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Law enforcement in this country murders approximately 1,200 people every single year. 1,164 people have been murdered in the last 12 months alone. Yet the names of many are never said or known except to their families and friends. What's more, law enforcement agencies and other state actors harm our community in a myriad of ways that also go unnoticed, like racially profiling, sexually assaulting, and wrongfully incarcerating our folks. If we don't know what's happening, then we can't fight back. We can't adequately organize a response. So, as much as often, mostly on Thursdays here on Law and Disorder, we do a state roundup of news related to state violence. We hope this segment serves to expose, agitate, and build. This is the State Terror Roundup for the week of November 18th, 2024. Yesterday, more than 60 members of Congress demanded that President Joe Biden grant clemency to the thousands of incarcerated people serving unjust sentences or sitting on federal death row before he leaves office. In their letter to the president, lawmakers urged him to use his clemency powers to help broad classes of people and cases, including the elderly and chronically ill, those on death row, people with unjustified sentencing disparities, and women who were punished for defending themselves against their abusers. The letter was spearheaded by Representatives Ayanna Pressley, James Clyburn, and Mary Gay Scanlon, as well as other members of the group known as the Squad. Biden has granted 25 pardons and 132 commutations out of the thousands of applications his administration has received. He's also pardoned two classes of folks who were not incarcerated, people convicted of simple marijuana possession, and members of the military who were court-martialed because of their sexual orientation. Part of the concern and urgency, of course, of the legislators is the upcoming Trump administration and a president who very much supports the death penalty. Some of us may remember the full-page ad he purchased in 1989 calling for the execution of five children falsely accused of rape, now known as the Central Park Five. In the last 6 months of Trump's presidency, he executed 13 people, ending an almost 20-year de facto moratorium on federal executions. During Biden's 2020 presidential campaign, he did indeed promise to end the federal death penalty. That has not happened. The Heritage Foundation's proposed 2025 presidential transition project advises the next conservative administration to do everything possible for the 44 prisoners currently on federal death row. That means murder those folks, as well as to pursue capital punishment in new cases. Lots of folks fear the right-wing think tank's 900-plus page policy wish list will be the Trump administration's roadmap as it moves to deport millions of people, deregulate industries, slash taxes for the wealthy, and send more people to death row. Post the Trump election victory, I've seen many organizations clamoring to prepare for a Trump administration, and prepare we should. This government, as my comrade Taha Ox says, has two modes, smooth and soothe or rough and rugged. Either way, we are being oppressed, targeted, and harmed. It's just the fervor with which they do it. Our folks on the inside, who are mostly black, brown, and poor, are often the ones with the heaviest boot of white supremacy on their necks. That boot is about to turn into a whole entire body of oppressive pain, and it's on us to have their backs. Source, Elizabeth Law Greenberg of the Appeal. And in Seattle, a man tasked with overseeing Seattle police as part of their consent decree, similar to the one we have in Oakland that OPD hasn't managed to get out of for over two decades, is developing a plan with Target, of all corporations, to boost police legitimacy. Federal monitor Antonio Oftley sought extensive input from police chiefs, but with no clear evidence of authentic community input, advocates are concerned about the plan's true motivation. Antonio Oftley was appointed in 2020 as the Seattle Police Department's federal monitor to ensure the department abides by a 2012 agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice. Guess they can't get out a consent decree either. That decree outlines specific requirements for Seattle, such as implementing reforms to force police to comply with the U.S. Constitution. Oftley is the executive director of the consulting firm Leadership for a Networked World and has developed robust connections with police chiefs and sheriffs from across the country, and was tapped to deliver a report in 2023 on public safety reforms for the city of Minneapolis, where George Floyd was murdered by a cop in 2020. Now, according to documents obtained by PRISM, Oftley is spearheading the development of a plan dubbed the Community-Centric Service and Culture Framework, funded through a program under the DOJ in partnership with Target Corporation, which has its own controversial history of supporting policing and surveillance. Target, this might hit your Black Friday dollars. A draft of the plan outlines a vision to, quote, achieve an entirely new level of value, legitimacy, and trust in American police organizations. Documents about the plan state that it is informed by, quote, progressive current and former police leaders and represents a significant stride toward equitable public safety. I think it's against the rules to use the word progressive in the same sentence as police leaders. Community organizer Roxana Pardo Garcia was provided the draft document to review and said the plan does not offer a community-centric framework. One critical group that has been left out of these conversations are survivors of police terror. Source Glenn Allmicher, Prism reports. A Bay Area Rapid Transit police officer, or BART cop, shot and injured a woman at Union City Station Monday night, the agency reported. BART police said two officers responded to a reckless driving report in the station parking lot shortly before 9 p.m. During an attempted traffic stop, the cops alleged the driver tried to assault the officers, and one of the officers then shot the driver, wait for it, in the chest, because of course that's where you shoot an unarmed woman. The driver was identified as 32-year-old Union City resident Jasmine Gao. She was taken to the hospital and was in serious but stable condition. She's expected, thank God, to survive. This comes right after my people. The BART board denied rejected shutdown efforts by the Office of the Independent Monitor of the BART Police for more autonomy and authority over the BART Police Department. Source Carlos Castaneda for CBS News. So many of us were traumatized by watching the brutal execution of 36-year-old Sonia Massey, a black woman who had called police for help, was brutally murdered by two sheriff deputies for boiling water on her stove in her home they never had any business being in the first place. I had the immense and painfully powerful opportunity to meet Sonia's father a couple of months ago at the Love Not Blood Families United for Justice 10th anniversary gathering. A quiet but powerful man determined to turn his family's pain into power. Side note, just months before Massey was murdered, before Sonia was murdered, her 4-year-old cousin was also murdered by law enforcement. Sometimes it shocks me how soon the families get into the fight, not just for their loved ones, but for all of us, and with the demand, never again. Working with impacted family members is one of the humble honors of my life. In regards to the murder of Sonia Massey, the Justice Department has launched a civil rights investigation of Illinois Sangamon County Sheriff's Office. The July 6th encounter between Massey and two county sheriff's deputies who came to her home near Springfield ended with Deputy Sean Grayson, who was white, shooting her following a dispute involving a pot of hot water in the kitchen. No, wasn't no dispute. She was boiling water. Grayson said he felt unsafe, told her to turn off the water. She turned off the water, and in doing so, she said, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus," which I guess shook the devil inside of Grayson as she followed his commands and put down the water. He shot that woman in her head. And then when they talked about rendering aid for that woman, he said, "It's a kill shot. It's a headshot. Why bother?" Grayson was fired and charged with murder and other offenses, which he is currently fighting in court. In a letter Thursday to county officials, the Justice Department said the shooting, quote, raises serious concerns about SCSO's interactions with black people and people with behavioral health disabilities. The shooting also raises concerns about policies, practice, procedures, and training regarding community policing. There's no such thing. Bias-free policing, there's no such thing. Response to behavioral health crisis shouldn't happen by cops. Use of force, de-escalation, they don't know how to do that, and other matters, the DOJ said. Additionally, the incident and prior 911 calls involving Ms. Massey in the days before her murder indicate possible issues with the emergency response and dispatch system, according to the DOJ. The DOJ's probe is separate from the ongoing case against Grayson, who has pleaded not guilty to charges of murder, aggravated battery of a firearm, and official misconduct. Massey was a mother of two. She joined Breonna Taylor and Atiana Jefferson on a growing list of black women killed in their own homes by law enforcement, whose deadly use of force has come under scrutiny. Say their names, and we say the names of all black women stolen by cops: Sandra Bland, Yvette Henderson, Natasha McKenna, and so too many more. Source for this story, CNN. And yesterday, I had the painful honor of facilitating the Black Lives Matter grassroots media call with Dr. Malina Abdullah, where I learned that two nights ago, Long Beach police murdered Brandon Boyd, a 38-year-old single father of four, on the steps of a church after he called for help due to a mental health crisis. After police murdered him, they arrested two of his sisters and his niece for grieving too forcefully. Cops say he was armed. The family is pushing back. Police also say there was a standoff, but witnesses say no such thing occurred. Black Lives Matter grassroots was immediately on the scene doing a people's investigation, is currently supporting the family. And you can get updates about the fight for justice for Brandon Boyd, though we know there is no justice in these cases, because the only justice would be Brandon back to raise his four children. But you can get updates on the fight by following their socials. They are all under Black Lives Matter grassroots. This has been the State Terror Roundup for the week of November 18th, 2024. The State Terror Roundup soundtrack provided by Coffee Brown, an Oakland musician, singer, and songwriter who has been a force in the Bay Area's hip-hop and soul scene since the early 1990s. You can check her out at kofybrown.com, and our website and socials are linked from our site at kpfa.org. Shout out to my producer, Jesse Strauss, for helping me curate the content for this segment. This has been the State Terror Roundup for the week of November 18th, 2024.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.